glorious humans, gentleladies, ladmen, ladies and gentlemen, dreamers and dreams alike, and welcome to the Devolver Digital Forecast here at forecast.devolverdigital.com. Hi, I'm your co-host, JM.
And I am Jared.
Hello, Jared.
How's it going?
It's going pretty all right. Yeah, doing all right. It's spring spranging.
That's good.
How about yourself?
Good. It's been a couple of days of some decent weather. Which will continue for at least two more days before it starts to get just ungodly hot here. Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying that while we have it. But yeah, man, pretty all right, pretty chill.
Excellent. Been playing anything?
Let's see, what have I been playing? Started playing the RE4 remake that I think is like a year old now at this point, but I'm just finally getting around to it. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of fun. I loved the original, and this is great. It plays like how you remember that one playing, rather than
good.
Yeah, so
than how it actually,
which is good. Yeah,
yeah,
that, and then just still hopping on Stardew Valley every once in a while just to decompress. But what about you? Anything good, fun, exciting?
I've been hell diving, doing a lot of that. It's still fun. They keep adding new stuff to the game. They added big AT-ATs basically that are also factories that drop bots out of their bellies, so they're pretty fun to kill. And then playing Pepper Grinder.
Oh yeah,
the boss battles in Pepper Grinder are hard.
They when I was doing like ratings for that game, I had to capture footage, and I was just like, I need a cheat build. So I had a cheat where I could just add hearts with a with a key, because I was like, this is too difficult to do this quickly.
Yeah, it was. It's,
yeah, they're
it's,
nuts, man.
It's a difficulty spike for sure. My mom really wanted Pepper Grinder, so I sent her a code, and then she's like, "Hey, how do I hit the boss at all?" I was like, "I'm sorry, mom." So I'm gonna give Riv a piece of my mind. Let's see, what do we have? Children of the Sun also came out. Segueing into news, so we've got Pepper Grinder and Children of the Sun still brand new. People can still get those. Available for a limited time. My understanding is that after the death of humanity, we won't be able to get these games anymore. So really get them while you can, because that date draws ever closer. Jared, did you know that it's announced that Loop Hero's coming to mobile?
Didn't we just do that?
Did we just do that?
I was gonna say, I think that's just like a brand new announcement.
Jared, I don't know when things get announced. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know they're coming. And if you hear the question in my voice, I double checked that it has been announced before I wrote it down to say it. But that's very exciting.
Yeah. That game is like, I mean, it's a great game in and of itself, but
yeah,
really will work well as like a mobile title. Just it's addicting loop. Like,
yeah.
Loop Hero. Yeah, no shit. But yeah, that's exciting too.
Yeah. Did you ever play it on they had a mobile build way back in the beginning?
No, I never. I think I got like the test flight invite, but I just,
yeah,
at the time I never checked it out. But I did play a lot of like just the base game. So
yeah, this new one's better. I mean, as far as like being actually made for mobile, like on an iPad it was fine, but mm-hmm. like on a phone it was way too tiny and you couldn't do things.
Sure. So
they've done a lot of stuff to make it good. So it's a lot of fun. And so that's going to be really exciting coming to mobile for officially the first time, you know, as opposed to all of the clones that have been made since the launch of Loop Hero,
mm-hmm.
Which, as anyone knows, is a problem when you've got popular games, is that a bunch of people will rip off your assets.
It's very true.
And try to make games. Jared, I appreciate you just looking at me right now as I bumble my way through this segment.
I was like, I know what you're setting up, but I keep waiting if there's a tee off, or if it's just like the ball's hovering in the air. And I'm like,
What do we do?
What happens when people clone games? What do you do?
Thank you for asking,
what,
Jared.
What do I do?
Thank you. Well, Jared, you contact what the English refer to as a solicitor.
Oh, really?
Or in America, we call legal counsel. And I covered both of her titles. That way she can't sue me. We have Devolver's solicitor and legal counsel, Andrea, here with us today to talk about covering our asses legally.
The law.
The law. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. Amazing. Thank you for what a wonderful intro, guys. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
How are you?
Oh, yeah. Am I supposed to continue with the intro myself? Should I?
I don't fucking know. Yeah, go for it. If you have something to continue with,
no,
go.
That was it. It's just hi. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Perfect.
Thanks for having me.
What are you playing? Thanks for coming. Andrea, what do you do at Devolver Digital?
So you nailed it when you said I was the solicitor / legal counsel. So for all of you guys who are so excited / intrigued by my job, I'm here to tell you what it's about. Well, there's only four of us at the legal team here at Devolver, which means we actually do a lot of everything. So pretty much anything you think legal should be involved in, that's what we do. So anything like the company needs to do or Devolver needs to do that involves a contract, anything that involves anything that probably needs legal sign off, we get involved in on. So I don't know. It's a very general job, but our day to day looks like quite spread out, I guess, like in terms of topics. So we'd be like doing employment 1 second and then contracts another second. And the contracts could be like for publishing a game or distribution, so on a certain platform. And as you mentioned, takedowns or infringing copies of our game as well.
What's your favorite part?
Oh, good question. All of it. Duh. Thank you, Devolver, for hiring me. Just kidding. I mean, I think...
But you're not a new hire. You've been here for 3 years
now? Years, yeah.
Four?
3 years.
What is time? Yeah.
Yeah. 3 years. I'm trying to figure out if it's 3 years or like it's about 3 years. Yeah.
Okay.
So I joined right when the company was listing on the stock exchange. So I think I joined like maybe a month or a couple weeks after our general counsel joined, who was also on this podcast. Yeah. And then since then, it's only been excitement every day.
Nice. That's fantastic. So you really like contracts?
Yes. I don't know if that's me saying I love contracts or that I've brainwashed myself to like contracts because it's all I do.
Okay, fair. How did you wind up getting tangled up in Devolver?
Well, it's actually not that exciting of a story, but essentially how it works as, like, at least in the UK, when you want to become a lawyer, you have to finish law school. And then after law school, there's this thing, like a mandatory course, an exam or set of exams called the LPC or legal practice course. And then after that, you have to find a training contract, which just means usually it's with like a firm, like a law firm, or it can be in-house like Devolver. As long as there's like a training provider, so that would be someone who can like check off all the training needs that you have. And it's usually for 2 years. So it's basically like you start working as a lawyer, but you're a trainee. Yeah. And so essentially that's for 2 years. And then during those 2 years, you kind of it's like there's more mandatory exams or like courses. And pretty much that's like the pathway to becoming qualified. So once you become qualified, then you become a solicitor, like me. So I was meant to look for a training contract at a law firm, and I was applying to those. And in the meantime, I was thinking, well, I might as well just paralegal because I need money. So I looked into paralegaling jobs like at law firms or in-house at different companies. And I saw there was a posting for Devolver. So I answered it thinking like, okay, I'm probably not going to get this. Like, it seems a little bit too cool for me. Like, I'm not that cool.
Were you familiar with Devolver already?
No. So I had
Okay.
I have grown up playing games, but I would say I was very basic. Devolver has schooled me in being less basic as a gamer. But yeah, I had never really heard of Devolver. And then when I looked it up, when I was like answering the ad, I was like, okay, this is really cool. And I was like, too cool for me. Not going to get it. But then I answered it and then met Brian and he liked me for some reason. And so I went through. And that's how
probably a couple reasons. Probably got lots of wonderful qualities.
Thanks, Jam. Thank you.
Not none that Jared and I are aware of, but I'm sure Brian, someone, as a lawyer, can see them.
I was like, you probably doesn't sound like a very good endorsement there. But thank you anyway. So that's how I ended up at Devolver.
Nice. So this was you just doing it as a paralegal thing. Yeah. You'd already done your, I want to say residency, because it sounds like a doctor's residency kind of thing.
Yeah, so.
So you'd already done that.
Actually, no, sorry. That was not well explained on my part. Sorry, guys. But I basically was a paralegal. I was paralegaling or looking to paralegal before I got a training contract. So I had to do those 2 years still. I still had those 2 years left before I could qualify. And then when I met Brian and I heard about like what the job would entail, and it sounded really exciting, like, you know, setting up, I guess, a legal team or being like the legal team basically between the two of us for a company that's growing and like going to list on the stock exchange. It's like all really exciting, really cool work that I wouldn't necessarily have a lot of exposure to if I was in a firm, or maybe not the same level of exposure to. So I obviously, when he told me I got the job, I was like super ecstatic. And then I started working right away, quickly realized that it was a lot. And I was like, maybe this could count for training. And so Brian and I talked about it. And actually, to give him credit, he actually asked me before I could even ask him if I could have a training contract. He was like, do you want to train with us? And I was like, yes. And so I did 2 years at Devolver training, and then I qualified.
Nice.
And you're still here for some reason.
And they couldn't get rid of me. That's what happened. I stuck around.
Nice. How's Brian as a trainer?
As a trainer? Very good. Yeah? Yeah. Brian?
Seems like you would be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. And it's really nice to have like a small team, because it actually means you get to do a lot and learn a lot really quickly. So I get a lot of like work that I normally wouldn't probably get if I was at a law firm or anywhere else where you have a bigger team. And I actually get to like dabble in a lot of different things. So usually how it works at a law firm, sorry, just schooling you guys in law firms, like not like you wanted to know.
Please, we do actually.
But at a law firm, usually how it works is you train in different like sectors. So it'd be like M&A, like mergers and acquisitions, or like finance and banking, or like energy, or like, yeah, you get it, employment. So then you would do like six different sectors, and then you qualify into one. So then you start working as like really niche, practicing like a certain type of law, but then you get a lot of different cases in like a certain type of law. Whereas in-house, especially in a small team like Devolver, what happens is everybody does everything and everyone is very general. We become like generalists. So we get to dabble in a lot of different like sectors. And I guess everything under the sun, things that I wouldn't even have dreamed of or thought about. And then you kind of, it does mean like you don't get super specific or drilled in, or like you don't usually become an expert on just one thing. But I think I'm really enjoying that right now. So
nice. It kind of reminds me of when Devolver was small. And there was just a few people, and everyone kind of had to participate in everything. Like, there were, you know, people who were mostly in charge of a thing, but like everyone was kind of involved in helping everything to go. So now the legal department is like a little version of that within the larger Devolver.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
No, that makes sense completely. I feel like when I joined, Devolver had already grown a little bit, but it hadn't grown to the size it was like now. So
yeah,
it still had some of that like fun Devolverness where everybody was kind of hands-on with everything, and it was really cool to see that. So obviously things have slightly changed just because of growth and whatnot and being on the stock exchange.
Yeah, now we've got departments
and... yeah titles.
Yeah, what's, you said that there are a lot, there were things that you got to do that you didn't think you'd get to do, like what's something, what's an exotic legal thing you got to do, you got to participate in?
There's loads of good examples, but I would say, I don't know, I'm blanking because I'm putting, being put on the spot. Thank you very much, JM. But I promise you there are lots of good examples. I just can't think of them right now. But for example,
that's
like
fair.
One example, which is quite like a basic example, but it's still intriguing, so I'll say it anyway. Also, it's the only one that can come to mind right now. Is when we're doing like, when we're acquiring a company. So for example, recently we acquired System Era Softworks, and it was like really interesting being part of that team that was like able to, well, I say part of the team, but that's just our legal team. So being part of the legal team during a time where you're like acquiring a company is really exciting, because I guess at a law firm or like maybe at a different company that was bigger, even in-house, I would have probably one small role. Whereas here I was involved in all like the discussions, and like I got to be in the, I guess it's in all the discussions of strategy and like working out things and like getting into the nitty gritty of like what the deal will look like and et cetera. So it's stuff like that, mm-hmm. where like, I guess you usually wouldn't have someone like more junior in their career, like me, being involved mm-hmm. or giving input in anything like that. Whereas I think here, especially Brian as a manager, encourages a lot of like everybody dive in, everybody have a look, and everybody give your input, which I think is really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds really satisfying.
It is.
Also sounds like a lot of reading. How fast do you read? Incredibly fast?
It is a lot of reading. I don't think I read incredibly fast, although it's not actually... I read pretty fast if it's like fiction, but if it's like a contract, you kind of can't read really fast because you'll miss something.
Just skim over the details, fill in the blanks later.
Yeah. I wish I could do that, but unfortunately you cannot. However, I will say like I've come to become a bit of a nerd now. I've fallen to the law firm or the lawyer nerdiness, and I do find like well-drafted contracts like really amazing to read. I'm like, wow. They did that. I didn't even realize. Like, it's so good. Whereas,
that's funny.
Yeah. Before I'd be like,
What makes a contract really well written?
I think it has to be really easy to understand. And it can, like, that sounds really basic, but you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised, guys. Yeah. and also being able to distill like really complex concepts into like easy to understand words, but also easy to understand layout. So sometimes there's like exhibits and appendices and like all things that needs to be like stuck into the contract. And you want to do it in a way that's easy for people reading it, so that when they're coming back like 5 years later, it's easy to find and easy to understand. So things like that. And also like making sure that, and this was a big one I didn't think of when I first was like a law student. I didn't realize until like, I guess, practicing law itself, using certain words. Like, so certain words don't necessarily have legal meanings. And so, like, you can have a really simple sentence, but it'll have all the accurate words, and that'll be, like, perfect. Mm-hmm. Whereas you could also have, like, a very complex document, which has lots of flowery language and lots of, like, legalese terms, but none of it really makes any sense, and it doesn't do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Is it fascinating? You look like you're going dead behind the eyes. You're like, I'm done.
No, it's I'm processing. I mean, so I don't know. I'm a nerd in a different way. Growing up, like when I think of contracts and I think of like using words in these sorts of ways, like, man, I'm a super fucking nerd. I always think of like stories of like the devil writing contracts for people and how you've got to like, how like you have to make sure that you've got everything. But I mean, really, I mean, kind of, you know, in the world of law, I guess you really do need to make sure that that things say what you think they say and that we're agreed on what these words mean.
Yeah.
And sometimes a word can look like it means something, but it doesn't mean anything. And I, so one important thing about the podcast where we have the legal team on is like, we're not giving legal advice. But if you were to give legal advice in a way that doesn't, that is not legal advice, well, I mean, you know, I just think of like, you know, an indie developer signs a contract with someone, you know,
yeah,
like what kind of words do they need? What kind of terms, you know, obviously they should have a lawyer.
For sure.
But, you know, like 100% we would recommend get your own lawyer, but like what kind of terms should they be looking for? What kind of terms should make them wary? Kind of things like that. I know that it's a heavy question.
It's a heavy question. I guess it would really depend, which is a very, very lawyerly answer.
Sure.
It depends. But it really does depend on what the contract is and like what the relationship is as well. But I would say some basic pointers that I always got in like law school and also like even now, like something's like, it's kind of like a good skeleton to go back to it every time, is like, who's entering into the contracts? So like, who are the parties? And you'll be surprised how many times that can get really confusing, especially with big entities, say like a small developer, big publisher, and they have like a million different entities. Like, who are the parties really? Who's providing the services really? Who's publishing the game, developing the game really? Another one would be like anything to do with payment. So how is payment being made? You know, what is the payment? And what happens when you terminate? So another big one, termination. Always be able to, or know how, or if ever, you can terminate the contract, and how to walk away, and what scenarios you can walk away, because sometimes you can't. Like, sometimes contracts are built in a way that you can only terminate in a very specific instance, and, like, that could be fine for some scenarios, but in other scenarios, you'd be like, okay, no, I kind of want to be able to walk away at any time. Yeah. And what happens after that? So, yeah, after termination, say, if I'm developing a game and I've given my publisher a bunch of stuff, or I'm publishing a game and I have a bunch of assets from a developer, like, what happens to those assets? And I guess this sounds very generic, but like obligations and responsibilities. So do you have any obligations? What are they? Are they captured the way you want them to? Are they realistic? Are you committing or overcommitting? Things like that, I guess.
Yeah. Cool.
Was that helpful?
I mean, yeah, hopefully. I mean, I think so. It's, you know, it's stuff that scares the hell out of me, like any kind of contracts or any serious documents. I have a phobia of them because I grew up with all these stories of the devil, right? And I just don't want to miss like that one comma or that one little like,
yeah,
clause that, you know, I mean, we hear all these horror,
yeah,
stories about contracts and,
yeah,
and movies and literature and stuff like that, where like, oh, you know, you forgot about the loophole clause, which says I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
Jump.
Yeah. I think it's, I don't know, I feel like even though I'm a lawyer, I still get scared sometimes, like when I'm like in my personal life, when it's not work, weirdly work, I'm like more like, okay, I can do this, it's fine. But I think when it's like my personal life, I'm like looking at a like a lease or like a contract or something, I'm like, like, do I know what I'm doing? And then I'm like second guessing everything. But I think in reality, like, contracts are supposed to be big emphasis on supposed to be easy to read and like for the purpose that they're made to be for. So I think as if you approach it with like a level head, hopefully, like, that's usually the best way to go, and keep asking questions. So if you ever have questions, always ask about the contract before you sign. Even if it's something silly, like, I think, like, I've had plenty of silly or quote unquote silly questions, and I've just asked them anyway, because sometimes you never know, like, you'd rather be safe than sorry. And also, you always want to know what you're signing up to. So that sounds very generic, but it's actually very helpful.
Yeah, it's good to remember. I mean, a lot of people will, what's the term they use? They're like, oh, this is just boilerplate.
Yeah.
Right? They just like, oh, this is just boilerplate contract. Don't worry, just sign it.
Yeah.
And that's
nobody trustworthy has ever said that.
But lots of people do
people
say that.
People do say it, yeah.
Yeah, they do.
But I mean, sometimes it is just a simple contract. I mean, there are boilerplate contracts. It's like, oh yeah, we just agree to do this thing. It's no big deal. But I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. It can be socially awkward, like, and I feel like that has a, you know, where someone's like, oh yeah, it's a general contract, you don't have to worry about it. And then you, because I'm the weirdo, like, I don't know, maybe I'm not weird, but like, I'll sit and I'll read the whole thing.
And that's amazing.
And they get impatient.
No, that's good. Like, that's the gold standard, platinum standard even. Like, that's what you should be doing when you get a contract. It's easy to like want to skim, which I always want to do. Not with work, but with personal stuff, like personal contracts. But I always know it's like better to know what you're dealing with up front. And so I think like, you're right. Like, always, always, always read the contract, even when it seems like it might be something that you've seen before, or like wording you've seen before in like other contracts. You never know. So it's always better to read it, I would say.
Yeah. But yeah, cool. I mean, it's weird. Like, you sign up at a new gym, and they're like, all right, cool, now sign this contract. And they hand you, like, a 7-page thing. And, like, just sign it. Don't worry about it. And you're like, I'm going to read it.
Like, sorry, I'm just going to need, like, a few hours. No, that happened to me, actually. I just joined a gym again. And when I signed up, they were like, oh, can you, you know, read the terms and conditions? And it's on this guy's, like, laptop. And I'm like sitting across from him in like the gym office. I'm like, how am I supposed to read that? He's like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, you can look it up again. I'm like, but I'll have already signed it. Like, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, terms and conditions. So are we going to start doing terms and conditions on all of our games and everything we publish and all of our media so that we can like get rights to people's faces and data and birthdays?
Definitely
and stuff like
not.
That.
Cause,
no? Because there's a lot of money to be made there, apparently.
Say slowly draining fractions of pennies out of their account every day from, you know, thousands of people. It adds up.
Yeah.
Definitely not. No, we are not collecting any of that. Actually, this is...
That's not legal advice, right? What you just
said. Because Jared and I got this... idea for
great
the podcast.
Oh, no.
If you would sign this for me real quick, don't read it.
Yeah. By listening to the Dwell Digital Forecast, you agree to forego all legal rights to your children, your children's children, and your children's children's children.
Oh my gosh. Well, Devolver Legal has nothing to do with that, y'all. Audience members. The 27 audience members. No, we're definitely not. I think privacy and data, as always, is a big hot topic nowadays, as it should be. But we are definitely not trying to take anything at all, because actually, privacy and data is a minefield. Because it's a hot topic, because it's being legislated on, because everybody's worried about it, like, which they should be, and rightly so, regulators are looking at, you know, how better to regulate, how better to come down on companies who are stepping out of line, etc. Like, that's just a whole minefield that we would rather not enter into. So even sure. even if you want to, JM and Jared, I would.
It's much more difficult to steal people's personal data, is what you're telling me.
We were working on a bot for the Discord for a little bit, and we were talking about importing just data on like what Steam games you had bought, and it would like give you stuff within the bot game, and immediately there was already like, we would have to know, like, if we're disclosing the data, if we keep the data, where are we storing the data? What data are we storing? And it was really interesting. I mean, obviously, I was asking this whole thing as a joke because we're not really interested in any of that. But, I mean, well, when I asked you, it was a joke. When it was for the bot, it was for the bot. But it was very interesting. And we weren't, it was not a plan to, like, stockpile data and, like, get a bunch of information. It was just, like, to make the game more satisfying to people that owned Devolver Games.
Yeah,
yeah. But even in that little instance, it spiraled out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and it becomes, like you said, very quickly, it becomes something you don't want to deal with because you're like, this has become like a 100-step plan from like my 1-step plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's very much understandable because people are, hyper-vigilant about their data now, and we are all hyper-vigilant about, how it gets stored, how can we delete it if we want to, and et cetera. But you said, it can make things quite difficult when you are just trying to move things like from one place to another, for example. Because as soon as it uses or triggers, I guess, like the line of questioning, then you have to finish the entire line of questioning before you can get to where you want to go.
Too much trouble.
Come up with a new get rich quick plan.
Damn, I was gonna sell the data. You mentioned moving things, and then you mentioned earlier in the contracts, like, I don't know, now I'm just asking questions just because I'm curious, or I don't even know, I'm just thinking out loud. Like the contract, who the contract is with, if you've got like a large entity and it's got all these sub entities and stuff like that. And then there's also like weird stuff where like you enter into a contract with an entity, but then that entity gets bought or dissolves, or, and there's all these other things too that are just, it's just, I'm glad I don't have to think about it, as I guess. Yeah. I'm glad that that's not my
No, guess. that's a good point. I think like, that's like kind of the art of, I guess, drafting a contract, because you need to, you want to have everything in there that would be applicable to your client, applicable to the parties, protecting the parties or like, whoever your client is, their interests. But at the same time, you don't want to be like putting stuff in there that is just like a 10% chance of that coming true, or like things that you feel maybe are not even, like, it could happen, but maybe it's not going to happen. And then the other side, like, the other party and their legal counsel is probably negotiating during the negotiation period. They're trying to kick stuff out because they're like, well, this is not going to happen. Or, they don't really think you need to, like, I guess, contract for something like so niche or anything like that. So it's like, that's what makes like the negotiation fun. And also makes the contracting like an art, because you want to put just enough that you feel like you've protected your client and you are happy with that protection, level of protection. But you don't want to go overboard, and you also don't want to make it so like arduous or like you don't want to put so many or heap so many obligations on the other side or so many things on the other side that they're like, well, we don't want to do this anymore. Yeah, so it's kind of like taking into account who your client is, like who the parties are, and like what the relation, and then you have to like also factor in the relationship between the parties, and like, are they equal, or is like one slightly like higher than the other in terms of negotiation power, things like that. So that's why it's kind of cool or fun.
Yeah.
So what about, I was going to say, shift gears to takedown notices, because those are kind of fun.
That's what I was going to say, too.
Hell yeah. what's that like?
Okay. Well, so they're not as fun as you would think. I guess, like...
It's not fun to just, like, slam dunk on someone who stole your IP. You're just like, get that shit out of here.
Okay, well, it's definitely fun when it goes through well, but it's rarely the case that it's so easy to take them down. So, Bevan, our other legal, like, team member, she deals with a lot of IP, and, like, she deals with a lot of the IP infringements nowadays as well. She's like kind of the go-to IP person these days. But with the infringements, I think like she could speak to it even better. However, I can tell you from what I know, like in my experience, is like, first of all, you have to prove that you are the owner of the asset. So you have to prove that that is your game, and or you have the, in Devolver's case, like we have the exclusive rights to publish this game. So like anyone else who's publishing the game or like licensing the game or whatever, distributing the game, it's not, you know, it's not allowed, it's not authorized. But then there's also like the actual fact, like it should be a slam dunk. Like that sounds like it would make sense. Like, okay, you yeah. are definitely infringing our game and we're telling you, so stop it. But people don't stop. And and especially with like Google Play Store and or like any other platform, really, like even Apple, it's really tough because they also don't want to be taking down like every game that gets a complaint, but at the same time they want us to prove it. And like it's weirdly hard to get a platform to take down a game that is infringing, and even if they do, ones that pop up like really quickly, it's like a game of like literally like, what is that game where like you're trying to like
whack-a-mole?
Yes.
Don't say it. It's trained. You're gonna get fucking sued now.
Hit a squirrel thing.
Fun fact, never call something a choose-your-own-adventure. They will get your ass, apparently.
Oh, cause is that really a trademark thing?
Yeah.
Oh, huh. See, that's another fascinating thing, because you'd be like, what? Or like, isn't it like Marvel owns the right to the word superhero?
So no.
I think that's true, right? So you technically, like, you can say a super space hero,
but all superhero as a word,
I think they own.
Yeah, that's another thing.
It might be Marvel or DC or something, but yeah, something like that, you know?
Yeah, that's another thing. It's like people get trademarks, like, or usually it's in the past where they'll get a trademark for something and you're like, how did they get a trademark for that? But then it means everyone else can't use it or can easily be taken down. Pay. Yeah. So like, speaking of trademarks, like that's an easy way to get things taken down, is like, if to prove that you own the asset or prove that you are the exclusive person of something, like you can show them that you have a trademark. But again, not all our titles have trademarks, or like not all the names have trademarks, or sometimes it's not even a name, it's just like a game. So it's kind of tough. And with like infringing games, sometimes, like with infringement in general, or with like anything that eventually could go to court, it takes like so much money and a lot of resources to get like one thing taken down, or like a lot of, or to get like, so if it, say like you were suing Jared for infringing one of your games, and then
what the fuck, man,
you guys were like fighting it out for ages and you couldn't come to an agreement and you decide to go to court, that's like years, probably years of like litigation, and years of lots of money on lawyers and on evidence gathering and all these things. And then you get like, at the end of the day, you could get like maybe not the outcome you wanted, or even if you do get the outcome you wanted and he is like stopped from using the game, or like he has to take down his game, then it's like, okay, but you spent all this other money and resource and time And in the meantime, like, both of you have been, like, tied up in this litigation for, like, years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine, too, it gets, because I had a friend ask me about this a bit ago, but, like, it's even more, because you say something like a title or like a direct art asset that's been stolen that is very clear, like, hey, you took this from this. But yeah, when it gets a little bit more like abstract, and you see it in games where people will just like rip off like a gameplay concept, you know, but then you have certain things where it's like, okay, so then are all roguelikes ripoffs of Rogue, you know? But then there are certain examples where you look at it and be like, yeah, this is very clearly just, like, you just took this game but changed the setting.
Yeah.
But then how do you really prove something like that? And then, like you said, probably years of back and forth that you're like, why do you even bother at that point?
Yeah. And with, like, stuff like that, like, copyright in most... So copyright arises, like, automatically, usually. So for example, if you wrote... Oh, if Jared... And he did, wrote his movie script. Copyright for his writing, like, that arises automatically. But with games, like you said, Jared, like, it's hard because copyright, again, it's dependent on jurisdiction, so it could be different in different places. But usually, copyright doesn't include gameplay, and it doesn't include, like, the idea of something or, like, the method of playing something. So... it's very tough because you can make it very, very, very similar, and then you can be like, okay, but, like, it's different. And also, like, when you're actually playing the game, again, you can't copyright your gameplay, so how are you going to protect that? It's a tough one, and it's, like, definitely been, I think, the subject of many a case in many a different place, sure, yeah, in many a different jurisdiction. And sometimes the courts decide one thing, and sometimes they decide another. So... it's quite interesting, actually. I just went to a law conference in Cyprus, and it was a games industry law summit. And so it was very niche and, like, very specific, but it was amazing. And, like, there were panels of people talking about clones, like, litigating clones, so clones of games, whatever. And then also talking about all the different case law around gameplay and around, like, how to protect a game and what happens when you do come across a clone in different jurisdictions, like, what that looks like. And there were, like, many famous cases. Unfortunately, I do not have my notes with me, but it was so good I literally took notes. I was like, this is amazing, because like, some of the cases are really famous, like Tetris is a big one, and I think it was found in the case for Tetris, like, that the... Again, don't quote me because I don't have my notes, but I think it was like the grid that Tetris is on is like so distinct that that could be like something that could be protected. And they found copyright in that. So the infringing game had infringed that and the colors and et cetera. Whereas with another game, I can't remember which game, but yeah, I can't remember the name. But basically it was like little pinball kind of game. Like a very zoomed in pinball machine game. And essentially, like, that wasn't found to be infringing, even though the mechanics of the game are the same and the gameplay of the game is the same, but the colors and et cetera, like, there's enough inside the actual game to make it look different that they were like, okay, well, you can't just copyright, like, and protect, like, one concept of a game.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, and it's definitely a toughie, because as a developer, obviously, I have not developed a game, but I can imagine if I did, I'd be really mad if someone ripped it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm going through my head all these little things, because I was like, you know, you can steal someone's animations, but like, say, for example, you're making, like, a shooter, and your gun is, like, a real gun. You're like, well, there's only so many ways you can reload this thing.
Exactly. So
like, well, at what point do you, like, is that copyright infringement, or is it just, like,
Exactly.
What do you do, you know?
Like... Exactly. And even with characters, like, I think there was, again, yeah. I can't remember the game that they were talking about, but there was, like, a couple characters where it's, like, there's a dude with, like, a giant mushroom, and he's, like, an old man, but he also has a rocket. And then, like, this other person creates, a very... I mean, it's definitely an infringing game, or it's paying very close tribute to that other game. They just stylized it differently. The art's slightly different, but, you know, the character has the same stuff. And then the courts were like, well, you can't really, again, I can't remember the jurisdiction this case was in, but the courts were basically like, well, you can't own the rights to every old man with a rocket and, like, who looks like this, like, with white hair. Yeah, like, yeah. You can't, it's yeah. like, the courts are trying to, you know, create a place where in like invention and I guess like development of games can still thrive without it being suppressed, yeah. but also trying to protect the developers and creativity. And it's just like, where is that line? Like that's a question for all of us, even like, where is yeah. that line when it comes to like Big Brother looking over your shoulder and like litigating or like, I mean, sorry, not litigating, but regulating what is what.
Yeah.
But putting a tie on King Kong is totally cool. Makes a completely distinct, unique character that stands on its own.
His name is Donkey. He's a different person.
Sorry.
Kong is still in there. It does make me, now we're just talking about it, it makes me think of like the fact that Disney kind of like fucked America on copyright laws because like it used to be that, I mean, you know, before any of us were born, like someone would write something, it would be copyrighted for like 30 years or something like that. I can't remember, much shorter time than it is now, or 30 years after the author's death of the author or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so that you end up getting like a whole lot of, you know, what we today call fan fiction. But you get other authors like Alice in Wonderland, like a whole bunch of people published other Alice in Wonderland books. Wizard yeah. of Oz, a whole bunch of people like wrote other Dorothy stories, all these books that are famous. And like so much of like the literary world thrived on this kind of thing. And because, you know, and I think they even call it like the Mickey Mouse thing. But like because Disney changed like the length of duration of copyright. In America, at the very least, and where America goes in these things, a lot of people are obligated to follow. Mm. That there's less of that. There's less of that creativity and that ability to just kind of like pile on and tell these extra stories about these characters and in these settings. Which then makes me think, does anybody make Star Wars fan films anymore? Because that used to be...
feel like they,
my favorite they part of
so
Star Wars
of that, you know,
because like... yeah, George Lucas just used to let that shit fly. And I'm like, I don't see it anymore, which makes me think that either Disney does squash people who do it, or people are just too afraid of Disney to feel like they have the freedom to do that anymore.
Yeah, I think again, like you see this a lot, even with Devolver, like, you know, Cult of the Lamb became a huge hit, and then suddenly there's like merch everywhere. And it's like, do you want to go after every single like person who's made their own like Cult of the Lamb shirt? Like, it's really kind of, I think on one hand, it's like a business perspective. So like Devolver as a business, like what is their ethos on this? Like, what is their direction and strategy on that? Like, what is their threshold? Like, do they really care about the little guys that are like just operating themselves?
Sure.
Is it when they hit a monetary ceiling that they're like, okay, this is no longer something we want to like let loose and let fly, like shall we crush this now kind of thing? Again, crush sounds horrible, but you know what I mean.
Destroy, immolate.
Just smush a little bit.
Just squish with your thumb.
I mean, it's not like we're not like cruising Etsy and like, you know, getting after people who are like handcrafting little lambs or anything.
No,
like that,
yeah,
right?
It's usually okay. it's usually like when something is, you know, someone's been making like usually like a huge profit on something or something like that. So for example,
yeah,
I know in terms of like fan fiction and like laws in the UK, at least with things like fan fiction, you can like use that as an argument only if you're not making it for like commercial reasons, and like you're not looking to commercially exploit something. So technically, even the handcrafting Etsy people could be infringing, but it's whether or not you want to go after them. So anyways, speaking
of, somebody just uploads a design onto a t-shirt website and like then like you know, then uses like t-shirt.com, or I'm just making up a name, to like sell, you know, t-shirts, that would be less,
that would not be fan fiction. That would not be fan art.
That's not the same thing as somebody sitting at home making things.
Or if somebody drew their own design based on, like, say, like for Cult of Lamb,
exactly,
right? It's like they're gonna do their own hand drawing and then put that on a t-shirt, but it's based on Cult of Lamb.
Exactly. So that's like, so Jared's example is like much better because that's like actually a fan art, and then they've just like created like again, like, there's always an argument on the other side. Like, if you really wanted to squish a person, you could try and, like, figure out, like, an argument against that, too. Like, you can see arguments for all sorts of things. But in that case, like, I would say that's a lot better. Because, again, that is actual fan art. Sorry, super off topic. But when you said the Star Wars fan films, I just remembered like the era of YouTube where they made like those Lego. Do you guys remember that? Like Lego stop motion of like Star Wars?
Yeah, the stop motion ones.
Yeah, and those were amazing. Also, very dedicated people.
Well, there's like dedicated people in fan films. Have you heard of the Indiana Jones fan film?
No.
That the kids made?
No.
You guys haven't heard of this? It finally came out, I want to say like 10 years ago or something, but it was a group of kids when Raiders of the Lost Ark came out. They were recreating it, like in their backyard, like in their parents' backyard, just obviously very cheap and DIY, but they were doing their own version of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And they did, you know, maybe like 40% of it.
Oh my gosh.
And then as they grew and became adults, they would like still go and like film parts of it. So they finished the movie, and it's like a shot-for-shot Raiders of the Lost Ark remake, but over the span of like 30 years. So they go from kids to adults back to kids. Like,
wow, that's so cool.
I forget what they called it, but then they released it, and it generated all this hype because they're like, what the hell? Why would you do that?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Also, they all stayed friends, which is quite amazing.
Especially after making a movie? Yeah.
For 30 years. That's really
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark, the adaptation.
Okay, so nice. Very original name.
Yeah.
The adaptation.
Yeah, started in 82 and then released it in 2014.
That's wild.
That's amazing.
That's wild. Okay, I have to write that down. I must watch that. Yeah, but I remember when YouTube was so big on like all those stop motion like fan things, and I was like, what is this, and why am I watching this, but why is it so good?
There used to be an old computer game called The Movies, and it was sort of like The Sims, but just like a, like movie sets, and the whole point is that you like you set up your Sims in certain situations and had all these predetermined things to do, but you would place the camera, and so like at the end of doing your thing, you would have like a 10-minute like movie that you could watch. And people were doing stuff online on like YouTube where it's like Kill Bill done in the movies, or like Empire Strikes Back, like, but all within using the limitations of like the stuff. And
that's
the game was
amazing.
Awesome. That stuff
was
cool.
So good.
That sounds fantastic. A game where you get people into a situation and then you have the camera in there and you film them and make a movie afterwards.
Yeah, it's like, so you
what an incredible
you set up the
concept.
Sounds like a really exciting game.
From our friends at Nereal.
From our pals at Nereal.
What could you be talking about?
I'm talking about the hit reality TV show game Crush House.
Oh, I wish I was smart enough to say that I had planned this from the start.
It's all right. It's genuine.
It all works out.
This way Nereal won't sue us.
And this whole podcast has been one big commercial for Crush House.
One long setup for a Crush House ad. Boom.
Amazing.
Nailed it. Please don't sue us, the movies. It's a different concept.
Yeah, please, the movies.
Nice. What a perfect... Just I feel like that just ramped to the end right there.
That's it. I was trying to think if I had more legal questions, but...
Why aren't you asking me about myself? Why am I just a lawyer to you, JM?
Shit. What video games are you playing?
Oh, good question. I've been playing Untangled. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
On my Switch. It's just very cathartic to play. Another cathartic game, which I've logged way too many hours on, is Stardew Valley. So when Jared was like, Stardew Valley, I was like, yes!
Never heard of it.
I love Stardew Valley.
I love Stardew Valley. When my sister showed it to me, I remember being like, this is not, like, this is stupid. But then I started playing it, and I was like, wait, why am I obsessed? I was like...
So I had the same thing. Like, my girlfriend doesn't really play games, and I'm trying to find things that she might like or that we could play together. And I was like, hey, Stardew Valley, like, it's a perfect, like, casual game.
Girl game.
Whoa, Jam. No. Canceled. But like... Leave this call right now.
That is a legally binding. But anyway, she was like, I grew up on a farm. Why the hell would I want to play a game that is this? But then just started like watching, like, man, there's just something so satisfying about it. It loops you in.
Yeah. Are you married on the game?
In one of my games. Oh, you mean like my girlfriend and I? Because we got married in one of our co-op games.
And whoa.
The first time I played it, I married Penny. And she always laughs at me because even when we play together, I'm like, hey, Penny. How are you doing? I found this for you. Let me gift it to you. She's like, what is going on over there?
I know. No, that's so good. That's so good. I heard that you could actually... like lead on everybody in the game. Did you know that?
Yeah, you can date, you can't marry everybody, but you can date everyone at the same time.
Yeah, and then they get mad at you, which is excellent.
They all break up with you.
It's excellent. Jam, if that's not an advertisement for you to get involved in this game, like, I don't know what else is.
Wait, what? I've played Stardew Valley. I like Stardew Valley.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't romance NPCs anymore in games. I don't know when that stopped for me. I think there was a large period of my life where I wasn't having any actual romance, and romances with fictional characters just made me too sad. That's why I stopped playing The Sims, because my Sims could get dates and I couldn't.
Oh, no.
That's the power fantasy, man. That's the point of video games.
I know, but then I have this thing where I come back to reality, and so it's just a general thing. I don't really romance NPCs anymore, and then like, which is why Baldur's Gate was so weird for me, because everybody's like, we boning, and I'm like, what the fuck? I haven't even winked at you, like,
leave me alone.
I saw somebody talk, there's the scene in Baldur's Gate 3 where like Shadowheart and Lazelle, like two main like female companions, like you wake up in the middle of the night and they're like fighting each other, but someone was oh man, a game where two women are fighting over me? This truly is a fantasy video game.
Brutal.
Wait, Jared, have you and your girlfriend played It Takes Two?
We tried, yeah. That was a little bit too much of a game for her.
Oh no.
which is fine. I was like, yeah, this would be perfect, but she'd never played like a platformer, so it's like we had trouble like getting over like jumping and landing on platforms and stuff.
What about Unravel then? Unravel just like...
So I've not played that game.
Is that the two little yarn people?
Yeah, they're yarn. They're so cute. You know, it took me forever to start because I kept trying to change their colors because I realized you could change their colors. And I was like, I don't know what color I want them now. And then it took me like 30 minutes to decide.
I have not played that game, but I hear good things.
Because that one's really... like, I feel like it's easier than... It Takes Two.
Yeah, I try and that's the thing, is like was trying to, like, different ones to play, and I'm like, Stardew Valley just kind of set, like, that was almost, like, too perfect of a starting thing.
Yeah, I guess that.
Because then if I try and be like, oh, we can try, like Animal Crossing, it's like, well, is this, like, she just, you know, keeps comparing it to Stardew Valley. Like, well, no, you can't
Stardew
do that.
Stardew Valley's better.
It is way better. or even, yeah, I'm trying to think, like, in It Takes Two or something, it's like, well, can I do this? Insert thing that you could do in Stardew Valley. I'm like, well, no, like, not all games are. I don't know. I had her on an episode because I wanted to talk about this, because I was like, what gaming is like for somebody who doesn't play games and certain things like that. You would think, like, well, in Stardew Valley, I can talk to this person at any time and do this. Can you do this, like, in Elden Ring or something? I'm like, no, not. It's like, well, I see you go up and talk to people and give them things. I'm like, no, it's. Doesn't work the same way at all.
They're not people in this game.
Have you guys seen Fallout?
Oh, the show?
Mm-hmm. I've seen the first episode.
What do you think?
Nobody wants to know what I think about anything.
Oh, no.
I'm a huge Fallout fan, as I'll show on my camera
very
right there,
nice.
You know.
Vault Boy
but
tattoo.
Everybody, like, tells me to watch that show and be like, no, it's actually really good. I'm like, I don't know if I believe that at all.
It's fun. The art department and the set and, like, is incredible. Like, they nailed it.
Sure. Yeah,
visually.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like if I watch it, I'm going to have the feeling of, like, oh, yeah, it's like, oh, that's cool. Like, oh, cool, power armor. Oh, cool, this. Yeah. And but overall, you're just like, whatever, you know?
Yeah, I actually, we were talking about law stuff, and I was thinking about the old Bethesda Obsidian law
Ooh,
suit
boy.
They got involved with way back in the day. That, yeah. And then I read an article today talking about Fallout, and I had to stop when they said the Obsidian spinoff New Vegas, and I was just like, how dare you? Sorry, you're gonna say something about the show.
No, I'm just gonna ask if you guys liked it. I guess you don't, JM, is what I'm getting.
I don't.
Did you like
you
the
only
last
saw the,
of us?
The first episode, though, right? You said
I only saw okay, the first episode, fair. So maybe it gets.
I've not seen it at all,
there.
So I'm not, like, advocating one way or another.
Yeah. But,
all right. Fair. Well. What
my friend
your...
did tell me the end, though, like the very end thing. He's like, I have, he's like, you probably watch
it. Is
whatever.
It good?
No, it just, it's like a cliffhanger thing that, like, pissed me off, and it pissed him off, and I was like, oh. I
fucking hate cliffhangers.
It pissed you off without you even watching it.
Yeah, he's like, well, this is what they, like, tease. And I said, wow, that's just so, like, baity, and I don't know. It's also weird that it's on the West Coast, because the Bethesda games are all on the East Coast, so it just seems like they're trying to tap into the old Fallout games while they're like, yeah, well, we don't want anything to do with that California shit.
Yeah. Yeah. You, they pretend, yeah.
You see what you've done?
Sorry, guys.
Plot
revolves. Same space.
Every plot point so far in the first episode revolves around all of the characters being very stupid. Like, no one has any deductive reasoning whatsoever. And everything clearly is just happening to move the plot forward.
Well, I enjoyed it.
God, I'm glad. I don't want to ruin anyone else's
No,
fun.
I just thought I'd give, like, a different perspective, you know? Since we have someone who hasn't watched it. Someone who clearly doesn't like it. And I'm just like, I liked it.
Nice.
Do you guys have, like, favorite, like, adaptations?
Of video games?
Uh-huh.
See, that's the hard thing, right? Because video game adaptations are usually, like,
bad.
The worst.
It's not hard. Yeah. Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. the original Mortal Kombat, of course. The 90s.
The original
one,
Mortal
yeah.
Kombat movie is fucking
it's so fun. Or, like, there, you know, something like that where it's, like, just getting the essence of the. I'm trying to. I mean, like, the. Like, the Pokemon movies were pretty cool, like, the original ones.
Oh.
But then that also seems like cheating because there's Pokemon anime, but like, which is an adaptation of the games. But it, I don't know. Now I'm drawing blanks.
I mean, Arcane is speaking of the lady in Fallout. Arcane is one of the best things I've ever seen.
I've heard
life.
That. Yeah, I haven't seen that either. But that's
you haven't seen
Jared.
It. Oh, I love it. I love
you
it
have
so
to.
Much.
I'm sorry.
Come on.
It's also just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Like, every shot of that, like, literally every single shot from that show could be, like, a card in, like a magic game where, like, it's just such a gorgeous, evocative image. And you'd Ooh. Be like, oh, yeah, this is alleyway 5, but it's badass as hell.
I was going to say every shot could be, like, literally like a wallpaper. A movie poster.
That's so pretty.
Now I'm going to do a quick Google because I'm drawing a blank. Video game adaptations.
I hated the Super Mario movie.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was exactly what I thought it would be.
It was exactly what I thought it was going to be.
A bunch of references, and I'm like, oh, that's neat. Yeah. But as a movie, it was like,
I don't know,
like a blank canvas.
Westernized it.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I think
that's what they did.
Talking about the original one, right, with Bob Hoskins.
Also bad.
In a very different way.
Did you guys like The Last of Us?
I didn't see it because that's one that I loved the game so much.
Okay, and so this is happening a lot, Jared.
Well, but the thing with The Last of Us is that did not make sense to me to make into a show because it is so cinematic. Like, the big appeal of it was that it was this interactive cinematic experience. And the characters were well written, and it's like as you play, the relationship you develop. So in my mind, I'm like, why would I ever watch The Last of Us?
That's true.
I would just play the game again.
No, I can see that. But, like, aren't you curious? Aren't you like, ooh, like, what did they do with it?
I guess, but also it'd be like, either they do something different, which I don't think they did. I think it's kind of just one-to-one of the game. And I'm like, well, that was cool, but that was also just the same game I played, like, 10 years ago. You know? Like, because at least the Fallout show is a story within the universe, you know, rather than just like, oh, we made Fallout 2 the show, you know?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, man, none of these are...
The Heave-Ho film. Oh, shit, that's not announced yet.
Whoopsies. Directed by Michael Bay, of course.
That would be incredible.
I just like the one he did with like Mark Wahlberg, and where they're all like bodybuilder dudes and they're all big and muscly. I forget what it was called, but you said the Heave Ho movie, and that's the image that came to my mind, is all these big ass bodybuilder dudes. Like,
they're just an upper torso. Did you enjoy The Last of Us, Andrew?
I did. But I haven't played the game because I am scared. See, this is the thing. I get scared easily, so I'm like, I'm going to be scared during the game. But then I watched some gameplay, and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to be okay. So I'm going to play it.
Thanks.
It's good. It's classic.
Yeah.
I also love the second one, just for what that's worth. It's a controversial title, but...
Oh. Okay, well, I'll play both.
Trying to think of other video game adaptation things.
That sounds like an entire episode's worth of stuff we could talk about.
Didn't we do that?
I feel like we must have.
Or adaptations in general. Like, are there any book movie adaptations or anime movie adaptations?
Book game adaptations? Actually, there's the... What was it? Is it Myst? The novels for Myst?
That could be cool.
Actually really good. I actually really like the first one. The second one's okay, and the third one doesn't maintain the integrity of the first. But man, what are they called? Now I gotta look it up. But I read those, and I did not expect to like them nearly as much as I did.
The games?
The book. Technically, I haven't played Myst.
Okay. So you just like the books.
The Book of Atris is the first one, I think. And it's really good.
Is it as like obtuse and difficult to find out, just like Myst?
No, I don't think so. And maybe I should play Myst. I think really it is, like, because Myst is so obtuse, and I think it's kind of it fleshes out a lot of the things that Myst is obtuse about.
I don't think I've but ever I don't know, heard I never someone say obtuse in like a conversation, but I think that's amazing. Like, good word. I'm going to be using that now.
I found that film rather obtuse.
Yeah, I love that. I've never heard anyone like use that before. I like that.
I learned that from Shawshank Redemption, oh. I think, using the word in that way.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you being so obtuse?
No, but I like it. It's good. Yeah. Cool.
Great.
Well, if you guys find a game movie adaptation that you actually like, please let me know. It sounds like neither of you do have any.
Yeah.
Arcane.
Yeah, Arcane.
Okay.
Jameson's good.
Jared, you haven't even seen Arcane, so you can't give that one as your recommendation. Well,
I was like, the only ones that it's because that was supposed to be good, and then the Mortal Kombat movie is fun mm-hmm. for what it is.
It's appropriate for the game.
Sure, yeah. Well, yeah. I'll be here all day if trying to...
Amazing.
You know what would be really helpful is if the good folks at discord.gg/devolverdigital went to the Fortcast channel and told us how dumb we are for not thinking of excellent adaptations that they will pull out of their asses instantly.
And definitely not look up beforehand, right?
Not look up beforehand.
Sure.
They'll say, you silly dum-dums. What about... I was trying to think of a franchise, and my brain just kept saying Last of Us over and over again. I'm like, that's not the one, Jam. That one has an adaptation. Me brain work no good. But yeah, discord.gg/devolverdigital. And if there's any legal questions that we should have asked Andrea, you can ask us there, and you will get mine or Jared's answer, Whoa. Which
will not be will legally probably, binding, but will be advice.
It will be, it will be yeah.
Cool. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for asking us questions. Nobody ever asks
us questions. Yeah, I was going to say, you should invite me back or whoever back and make them interview you guys. I don't think I've ever heard you guys as the interviewees.
Nigel interviewed me once, and then I fucked up the recording and had to re-record my answers afterwards.
Like Space Ghost, Coast to Coast. It's a
pretty awkward episode. And I was so sad because I was like, it's the one time somebody interviewed me and it felt so special. Like, I was like, oh, thanks, Nigel. Well, that's so cool.
I would love to interview you guys. That.
Fantastic. You can Next come back time, and interview yeah. us then.
Yes. I'd love to interview you guys.
Thank you for joining us
thanks for having
today.
Me.
Yeah, it's a delight.
I don't even know what I said, and, but hopefully none of it is too insane.
I don't think any of it was insane. It was all very cogent as far as I could tell.
Well, I didn't use the word obtuse, but so I think I failed.
Well, you know... If you know what they say, if at first you don't succeed, you can always obtuse.
No.
No. Normally my brain's better at this kind of thing, but it didn't work out today. I was trying to. God. How do we end
this? Put this dying dog out of its misery.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Twitch.tv/devolverdigital. You can go to Facebook and find us there. We're on Instagram and we're on TikTok.
Amazing.
You can go to @AskAndrea on Twitter and ask all of your legal questions there. And she will answer you for free. I hope nobody actually has a Twitter handle called Ask Andrea, because that will be funny for them.
If it's legal questions.
Especially if they just start getting legal like, questions on their on their makeup blog. But yeah, thanks for joining us. And my brain is really still really trying to work hard to make an obtuse joke, and we just gotta go. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.